This is Application Paranoia, Season 3, Episode 3. Hello and welcome again to Application Paranoia, our podcast dedicated to secure DevOps and all things AppScan and all things secure DevOps. I'm Colin Bell, and with me as always are my wonderful colleagues, Chris Dewar and Rob Cuddy. And this week's episode, we're very excited to be having an interview with Zoe Breiterman. So I won't spoil the fun there, but Zoe has an amazing background in application security, and we're very excited to have her on the show.
Yeah.
So Rob, how are you? What's been happening?
Hey, I'm doing great. Got a chance to be in an event earlier this week. So I actually got on a plane, went to a conference, that was connected with people. It almost felt normal. So that was very cool. It was the Agile International event. And the fun thing about it was in Florida. And I did not realize this, but recently found out that the state of Florida actually announced a statewide dessert. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. But it was funny to realize that the governor of the state of Florida held a press conference to announce that strawberry shortcake is now the official state dessert in the state of Florida, which is interesting because for many years people thought key lime pie was the actual.
Why wouldn't it be key lime pie?
Exactly. So he actually brought this up at the press conference, and what was funny is that key lime pie is the official pie of the state.
It's but the pie of dessert!
It did not actually have
apparently it's a snack.
Dessert.
Apparently we have it. Hey, it's dinner now. We're going to have key lime pie for dinner.
A pie has to have a lid on it. It has to have a bit of pastry on the top. So, it's not a... Anyways, we won't go there.
No, well, I remember hearing a comic go on a rant one time about which is better, cake or pie, and it was all around a frosting debate, so yes. But that was fascinating, right? Somebody with an axe to grind was like, hey, we don't have a state dessert, so, you know, we're going to have a state pie, and now we have a state dessert. So
someone woke up and chose violence. Yes. Like, I must have strawberry cheesecake, which has no bearing on Florida at all.
Yes, exactly. I didn't.
It's like we're going with brownies. Brownies are the best.
So, Chris,
it was fun.
Chris, how are you doing, Chris? And what dessert would the wonderful New Hampshire have?
Well, you know, for me, it's got to be the toffee chocolate chip cookie. That's bar none the best dessert. And a close second would be the vanilla cupcakes.
Oh.
So if I had a choice, I could live off of those two items for the rest of my life. But of course, you can't on account of sugar and whatnot.
And have you found spring up that way yet?
A little bit, yeah. It's getting nice out now. You don't even need three layers, four layers, five layers, or a heating element in your pockets. You can just go out there like the old times, like the long, long ago. For us, it was, you know, a short 6 months ago. It feels like 10 years. But, you know, winners are winners. Yeah, like those things. Hands. Those can be packed away now. It's kind of nice.
Exactly. Yes, and the leaves are changing color again. It's just now green.
But they're appearing.
I just found out that Florida has deciduous trees, and now is apparently when the leaves fall in Florida. Like, that's what? They fall in spring?
Yes.
Also, why do you even have deciduous trees? It never gets cold. That's very weird.
Yeah.
But apparently it's a thing.
There's no smiley face trees in Florida, though. So
you know, if you had stayed at your little Florida conference a little longer, you could have seen some foliage, strangely, in spring. If you had been paying attention to the 5 or 6 people that have maples trees in their yard.
And there'll be a lot of it because it rained a whole lot down there. So go figure.
Yeah.
It always rains there, though.
It does.
So I'm heading on a business trip tomorrow. It will be after tomorrow by the time you hear this, but I'm heading to Australia. So I have the pleasure of spending 24 hours in coach. But on that, I figured it's important. Remember we did the names, the Australian nicknames and all that sort of stuff, right? I found this, and I'm not going to share it with you. I'm going to pick one of these each episode, I think. But these are nicknames for workmates in Australia. So this is something I found recently. So I'm gonna say what the word is, and you've got to guess what traits this person might have that earns them this nickname, if that makes sense. So let me pick one. So if we were going to call someone Lantern, so you're, hey, g'day, mate, here's Lantern.
Oh, what, my guess what? Is that person is dumb.
See, I was going to go in the other direction because it could be bright.
Well, that's Australia, right? Though. It's like word association. Yes. Like bright as a light bulb and sarcastic. Sarcastic.
Yeah. You're very close.
Damn it.
They're not very bright and they need to be carried.
Freaking nailed it. I was halfway.
Yes. The need to be carried is fascinating. I'm taking 50%
on that one.
Yes. Wow. So there you go.
Wow.
So it's, you like, don't want to be called a Lantern. Like,
yeah. Can someone be a few batteries short of a Lantern?
Possibly. I think a Lantern is something that you light with a flame. Anyway,
yeah, we're going old school with this insult.
Wow.
The ones you should be wearing a corset.
Right? Those are the ones you could actually hear when you were at like camp, right? From three sites over, because the gas was so loud. And
yeah. Or they could kill you if it exploded in your face.
If a mosquito landed on it, it would just.
They burned your hands. Oh, they were miserable, but awesome.
Miserably awesome. There you go.
But something that I think will be a theme going through these podcasts going forward is we're very lucky to have some really good research at HCL, and they came back early this year with the top 10 technology trends for 2022. There's a whole lot of them. So there's ones on artificial intelligence, hyper automation, there's quantum computing, there's experience first strategy at core. There's cybersecurity. There's 5G, IoT, and blockchain and sustainable IT. So with that, I figured what we might do is focus on one of them. And I know when we talk to Zoe later, we were going to talk a little bit about blockchain. So I figured we'd start with that and maybe just get some thoughts on that. So let me summarize kind of what we mean by blockchain and why it's a trend. So the possibilities of blockchain technology are endless, obviously. And in 2021, there was an advert, non-fungible tokens, NTFs, which we talked about quite considerably. I think we had an episode on it. But blockchain technology has not quite realized its full potential. And there's a thinking that it probably will start to emerge this year. I think it's already starting a little bit, but I wouldn't mind getting your thoughts on it. You know, we, as I said, we had a whole segment on it before, but what do you think has maybe changed since we last spoke on blockchain?
Oh, I think it's wildly more adopted now. Mm-hmm. There's more and more countries out there that are using it as actual currency, which is crazy if you think about it. They're giving up sovereignty over their own money system so that they can use this generic non-controlled system. It's wildly interesting to me.
Yeah, because what was the first one? Was it Panama or somewhere
Ecuador.
El Salvador.
El Salvador. Yeah,
it was El Salvador.
It was in grief from the International Monetary Fund to tell them to stop it. And they said no. But they said no in the best way ever on Twitter, with basically make us. It's like awesome. Oh, I think it's great. I personally see blockchain a little bit now like the wheel being invented before the car kind of thing. Like nobody really knows. They know it's great. They know it's awesome. But they don't really know what it's going to enable us to do yet. Not quite yet. Even NFTs are not really where they need to be or where they can be. I think in the next 10 years, if you don't understand blockchain, it's going to be synonymous with not understanding how to use an iPhone today. It's going to be ubiquitous. It's going to be everywhere and everything is going to have or use something on the blockchain, almost certainly. Can you imagine a whole database effectively of just stuff you can't change? The immutableness of it is wildly attractive for a lot of problems out there. Supply chain is one of the big ones, and there is a blockchain company doing that, which is interesting to me. They can track where, say, your wine bottle went to from here to here to here. There's also, you know, chemical problems where if you have a problem with this batch, how do you make sure it's this batch and not some other batch? And blockchain can be applied there. There's just so many applications beyond just currency. I mean, consider the stock market, for crying out loud. Who knows what goes on there in any stock market? Blockchain makes it visible. It's only a matter of time before these exchanges for stocks suddenly become exchanges on a blockchain. It's almost certainly inevitable.
But one of the things that was key to some of the other trends, and we'll talk about them as they come up. And one that really stands out is artificial intelligence, and they're saying that in order for that to really become something different, it has to be accessible to everyone. So it can't be a complex maths problem.
It needs to be democratized,
very very easy and attainable. Do you think blockchain needs to maybe sort of get past that as well, because it's still very complex to get into it, you know?
It is. The challenge with blockchain, I think, right now is not necessarily how complex it is, but how much you really need to know before you can get going. Like, say, consider a credit card. You need to know how to swipe it through a machine, right? That's it. That's all you need to really know how to do, or tap it or put it in the little slot. That's pretty much it. With blockchain, there's a few more steps added on top of that. And also, how do you take that, you know, currency, which is it effectively is mimicking right now, and turn that into actual purchases? I mean, there's a ton of businesses out there that are accepting crypto payments for things. There was a house recently purchased with crypto, which is wild. So it's only a matter of time before this thing hits mainstream. And it's really going to come down to the major superpowers of the world, you know, the United States, the Chinas, the EUs, all saying this is how we're going to treat, you know, crypto. This is how we're going to deal with it. This is what we're going to look at it as. There's even central digital currencies coming out right now, or that they're looking into doing, which is effectively the same thing as, say, the dollar, but it's, you know, on a blockchain, which is kind of cool. You can literally see how much money is out there and how, where that money's gone. It's just, it's weird. It's wild. It's a whole new revolution that we haven't even begun to start down the path of yet.
Right. Right. And I think the funny thing, and you brought it up, Chris, is with the security side of this and the getting to know what to do, the thing that actually concerns me so much is the trust that's in the system already, right? All of the discussion that people are saying, oh, you know, blockchain's completely unhackable and it's totally secure. And, you know, we know being in this space, nothing is like that, right?
Nothing is unhackable.
Exactly. And so but most of the attacks that we've read about, right, or things that we've heard about, right, the Squid Game rug pull, for instance, right, are really things that involve not going after the blockchain itself, but going after people's access to it, right?
Or people in general.
Yeah.
Through phishing or getting their seed phrases.
It's more like a glorified phishing attack, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is.
I'm going to scam you into thinking you're investing in something.
Yeah, if I get your info, then I get access to your stuff. And so that's the part that I'm more concerned about. People, you know, we're already not careful with passwords, right? And two-factor and all of that. So this just adds another layer of complexity to it, to where people, and if you're forgetting passphrases or you're losing your wallet or all of those kinds of things, then you're stuck. You know, but the other thing we heard about too was there was the Ethereum thing where somebody basically faked mining a bunch of coins in putting them into the system and then took them out. So they basically used some fraudulent signatures to trick the system into thinking that all these coins were mined into an account, and then they pulled it down, right? So that there's stuff like that going on, and that can blow up a system really quickly too. So
That's not really any different than the current monetary system, if you think about it. Like, how many counterfeit $100 bills do you think are out there in the world? I bet you it's more than zero.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like every monetary system has problems like that because there's money in it. There's money in faking the system.
Yeah. I always love it when somebody at like a store holds up a bill and looks at it. And I'm sitting there going, what are you really looking
for? You're
going
to be able to tell. Come on.
You really know what to look for there.
Does that happen to you a lot, Rob? Yeah.
No, it does not. I don't.
Every time they buy something, they don't trust them. It's a $5. Why are you running the pen over it?
Yes, the $2 bill is real. Right. No, I use a card for almost everything. So it's yeah. But it's funny.
That's the thing. That's the thing right there that you just said. Yeah.
And like, okay, if you see a watermark, you assume it's good. Well, what if somebody's faked the watermark? Right?
Yeah. I mean, you think about it from a business perspective. How much do you think they pay to be Visa, MasterCard, Amex, et cetera, for every one of their, you know, transactions? They're paying a fee to be able to use those cards. And compare that to how much blockchain is going to charge you. I mean, it's pennies. It's pennies per transaction for some of these chains. You can imagine how attractive that might be to a business to not lose the 5, 6, 7, whatever percent MasterCard and Visa charges them on every sale. It's an interesting revolution that we're going to see within the next 5 to 10, almost guaranteed. Hmm. There's just no way that can be ignored. It's too profitable. It's too valuable. And companies like money, it turns out.
Well, it would be good when we get to the end of the year, it would be good to see, you know, maybe how that's progressed from 2022, because as I said, it's seen as a trend for this year. So let's see.
It is, and I don't think the SEC and the our federal government can sit on this very much longer. They're going to have to make a choice about how they're going to interact with it, or at least start down that road. Hopefully, it's non-draconian methods. Hopefully, it leaves open innovation and lets people enhance this technology and doesn't stifle creativity. But we'll see. And governments have interesting ideas about these sorts of things, so we will see.
Well, hey, friends, we are absolutely delighted to have Zoe Braderman with us today. And Zoe is a well-known information security leader and consultant and researcher who is extremely passionate about data and startups, blockchain technology, and, of course, the cybersecurity space. She's currently a security consultant for PurePoint International, and she's a frequent open source contributor. She's an OWASP leader and the current chair for the Women in Application Security Committee. She's an ambassador for Sneak and is in the top 1% of the TriHackney community, and she's a great advocate for diversity and inclusion. And she was just recently a featured speaker for the International Women's Day Techno Day, which is just a couple days ago, discussing what we can learn from failure. And so, Zoe, we are super delighted to have you here with us today. But from your background, it seems like you have a business degree and you've got a broad wealth of experience. So what kind of got you into this space and how did you get where you are today?
Well, I guess, you know, one thing from a business perspective is that a business degree is, you know, especially at the bachelor's level, is very much what you make of it. And it helps give you perspective in terms of anything you do. I guess I always knew I was a techie, but one thing you really can't get is that kind of well-rounded wealth of knowledge and context. And application security is, I guess, probably the most complex of security domains in terms of what it could mean. On the defense side as well, you know, how much is operations, how much is, you know, specific controls, what is the best tooling and methodologies for a given scenario. There are just a lot of complex problems to solve and they just keep changing, so it doesn't get boring.
That ain't that the truth, right? There's always something going on. I love what you said too, just about the context around business and applying that everywhere, because, you know, we see a lot, obviously, in this space of features and capabilities, right, and functionality, but you're always going, well, why does it matter, right? So we introduced this new feature, right, or we've done this thing to supposedly make things easier, but being able to put it into a context that people can understand is super important.
Oh, yeah. And if you think about, you know, feature in terms of software, there's a lot, you know, going on in terms of how to best approach that. You know, both, you know, innovation around threat modeling methodologies, again, not tooling centered. If you read the threat modeling manifesto, it's definitely not tooling
right
centered. And it's also definitely methodology agnostic. It's really about what the value ends up being to stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so again, the context is really everything when you're actually looking to solve problems.
Yeah, as developers, anyway, we deal a lot more with selling our ideas than you would think. We're saying I think we need to do this for this or that reason. You know, we're the people on the line that are closest to the code, so we know what the art of the possible is. And sometimes dredging that up and selling it to somebody is part of the fun. I don't know. I kind of enjoy that part. But for me, something that is very, very interesting is open source and how it kind of fits in all of this. It's not really application security specifically, but it definitely ties into application security pretty tightly. Log4j, our new favorite four-letter word, so to speak, comes to mind.
No, it has five letters.
Yeah. So I was just curious. There's this concept of a software bill of materials, what goes into your code, and you know, that whole color thing that somebody did for JavaScript a while back where it killed websites because they're importing this random third-party app that one person maintained, and just out of spite, they said, the hell with it, I'm not going to do it anymore. And a whole bunch of sites went down. So what are your thoughts on how we can do open source better?
You know, definitely get people involved, you know, starting with students. You know, as long as whatever license agreement is legal, I'm never in charge of the licensing agreements for, you know, good reason. I always consult someone who knows best for that knowledge. Getting people involved, definitely trying to expand upon diversity and inclusion, because you don't want just a specific subset of people. You, part of the value of open source is eliminating barriers to entry. And it also gets perspective, and it bumps up the numbers if you include all, you know, parts of our population.
Turns out that's a pretty important thing. another spin on that is not just building it and contributing to it and all that, but something that really kind of tickles the back of my mind is, how do you conceivably as a business properly incorporate third party anything into your build process?
Well, definitely make good decisions, do good due diligence, do, you know, an extensive cost benefit analysis, and, you know, as far as costs, monetary costs, you know, as well as, you know, risk. Keep in mind privacy and everything. Document what you've decided as part of a change management process. There's a lot.
Yeah, it's a pretty big pile of problems, that's for sure.
Yeah. I wish there were like a more kind of comprehensive answer.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about even application security and this threat modeling that we spoke about and bill of materials. It's all a bunch of ideas, and there's not really a step-by-step plan for any of it for every situation that you might conceivably think of, which I always found a little interesting. It's open-ended. It's, you know, whatever you make of it, but what if you don't know how to make anything of it? What happens then? How do those people get help? For me, anyway, I know with third party, it's a combination of make sure you don't trust a third party server and get those things in house at least, so that if you're using them, you control them. More than anything else, I think a few JavaScript packages could benefit from that. But yeah, there's a whole pile of things to worry about,
which I think is why it's so important to have a diverse opinion in there, right? And create spaces for people to be able to contribute, because those different perspectives then may let you look at something differently than you had before, right? Or see a different way to include it in, or have different ways to leverage those things. So it's not going away, right? Open source is here to stay. So having safe spaces for people to be able to contribute is just going to become more and more important.
Yeah. And, you know, that's all of these tools that are out there are developed at the end of the day. Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no substitute.
One of the things that we're trying to do with this, I guess, this season of podcast is we're sort of focusing in on what we see as the top 10 trends There's a whole, some of them are crazy things like quantum computing, and we won't talk about that today. But one of them I know, I think, you know, you certainly know a bit about is blockchain. And, you know, we see that as something that's emerging. So what are your thoughts on blockchain and the potential use and how it relates to security? Because, you know, obviously it's more at the leading edge, I guess, from a lot of the trends that we see.
I guess like other emerging tech, the, you know, kind of classifications of threats in general expand and vary. As far as expanding security to safety, there are, you know, there are risks of distributed denial of services attacks, as well as economic denial of service. So it really, I guess, the whole concept of bad actors are just, you know, really anyone, any node trying to take advantage for their own economic benefit. It's, you know, in that regard, it's not much different than on any other markets.
It's just how you approach it. Yeah. No. I think that's fair. It's, you know, I think it scares a lot of people, but maybe you're right. It's you approach it in a similar way, you know, so with zero trust and all the rest, you know. So.
Not your keys, not your coins.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of, you know, promise to improve upon things, including, security and I guess physical safety, because of what the time stamping and other mechanisms blockchain enables. I guess, you know, fairness in a very broad sense, as well as, you know, security, just, you know, being able to leverage those types of technologies for, you know, security related innovation. That's another spin on the intersection between blockchain and security.
It's funny because there's a lot of folks that look at blockchain and think it's completely unhackable and totally secure. And, you know, coming from, I guess, the schools that we do, you know, we kind of cringe at that just a little bit, thinking that, well, is anything really totally unhackable, right? Is it completely secure? Like those kinds of things. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Yeah.
The iPhone once upon a time was unhackable.
Right.
Mainframes were unhackable once upon a time.
Still is, isn't it? They are.
No, it's definitely, definitely hackable.
What, do they need to throw it away?
Yeah, you probably should.
Yes. But on the flip side, Colin, you can come out with your own coin.
Yeah. Oh, the Colin coin.
You definitely see, you know, as far as the hype, I guess, from the non-technical side mostly, you know, you see things, I guess, culturally, like, you know, the shitcoin conference. That's okay to say on a podcast, right? It's just the name.
Yeah, no, we can say that.
The shitcoin conference coming out in, you know, in Miami, you know, around the time of the Bitcoin conference, because
totally funded by Miami Coin.
Nice.
In terms of taking over the network, you know, having more power over the network nodes is, it increases the likelihood of being able to actually do harm or do damage.
Yeah, there's a lot more than just the 51% attack too. There's the NFTs that were bought for very low price because of a certain platform who shall remain nameless that didn't have proper security controls. There's been smart contract hacks that have emptied people's wallets because they trusted the smart contract and they shouldn't have. There's been, you know, I lost my, or put my password seed phrase, which is a rather conspicuous 12 words, and they just put it in the notes app on some website somewhere.
We covered the Squid Game one last year.
Squid Game, which is the other side of it, securities fraud. So rug pulls are a problem. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the blockchain.
Well, and you got people doing fraudulent mining. Right. So the recent Ethereum fault,
like light poles, right? They call illegal electricity.
So
they busted up a farm of a bunch of PS4s that were just mining crypto. It's like, I don't know what's worse. They thought it was like a pot farm or something. It's like, no, it was an illegal crypto farm.
Don't know.
What a weird world to live in. Oh, this is a great timeline.
Yes.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah. So true. You know, still, like, you know, People ask me, I guess, because I do blockchain related projects. They ask me, what are my thoughts on NFTs? And I think it's a little bit ridiculous. Who decides that these little images have value when you can't actually see, oh, which one's the original? It doesn't, it's not like that as far as art goes. I don't know.
People will pay for that blue check mark. I guarantee you that. Shoot. Once that becomes a thing, I think it's going on Twitter and another one where you can use them as your profile pic or something silly like that.
I think it's already there.
That you own, if it's not already there, yeah. And people will pay for that privilege to have a board monkey or board ape club or whatever that is. They'll pay for the privilege, their $500,000 board ape, just so they can put it on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's funny because it makes sense when you look at it from maybe like sport or entertainment. So you've got a really good photo of someone, shooting a basket in basketball or something like that. And if you own that, then that makes kind of sense because you own something which is tangible, and if someone reuses it, whatever else, if it's a picture of a frog,
there are definitely some NFTs that provide value though. There are some that you can get that represent a mining pool, and they'll give you, a major percentage of what that particular real world machine would have mined. But you're funding them purchasing the machines kind of thing by buying the NFTs. So it's like, there's definitely some value there. I think you're right. I think images is a bit silly. That's not really what they're for, but that's really what they became because the internet likes irony and silliness. Soon we're going to realize how good they are. I mean, real estate was just bought with an NFT recently. Like the first one ever was bought with an NFT. You now own your house and your digital permit for the house. It's a wild thought if you think about it.
That feels like a house of cards to me that could just come crashing down. Right? I actually didn't mean that as a pun, but thank you.
What happens if you lose your wallet ID? You lose your NFT? Does that mean the house goes away? What's up with that? I don't know the answers to these questions. All I know, it was bought with Bitcoin and it has an NFT that went along with it. That's all I saw on the story.
There you go. And I'm sticking to it.
That's it. Who knows the reality of the situation, but just the possibility.
You seem to know an awful lot about this, wild. Chris. Is there real estate transaction you want to tell us about?
You're moving to Vermont? 2-4 mansion that's an NFT. I'll be able to move into it as soon as it becomes real.
Yes. Now all you need is to have it in the metaverse. And then
Which metaverse? There's like 80,000 of them now. Jeez.
Exactly.
Roblox or a different one now?
Yeah. But it's fascinating, right? The art thing. I mean, art's always been subjective. So I grew up near New York City, and you'd go down to the Metropolitan and the Modern Arts Museums and stuff like that. And as a kid, sometimes you'd stare at something on the wall and go, really? Like, it's a big white square with a red circle on it and a line through it at just the right angle. And so, I think about NFTs and I'm like, okay, somebody likes that.
They look so cool, though, some of them.
Some of them do, yeah. And then there's other ones you're just like, what?
I don't know, there's an NFT art museum opening up. So maybe we're wrong. Maybe this whole art idea with NFTs, JPEGs is not so silly. I don't know.
you think about the Mona Lisa, right?
And is that museum online?
No, you go to it. Like
it's a physical museum, is it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But there's a Mona Lisa in the Louvre, right? Highly protected, the original, everybody knows. But I think we talked about this last year. There's a second one in the Prada Museum in Madrid, not nearly as highly protected, right? And I know this because I just happened to turn a corner in the museum one day and I'm like, wait a minute. That looks like the Mona Lisa. And the story goes that there was actually a second person in the room painting at the same time, but the originator, gets the credit, and this other one is just kind of on a wall somewhere. So it's fascinating what's going on in this space.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
So we talked about trends that we think see, but Zoe, I'm really curious what you see kind of happening in the space and what you think some of the top trends are. Around security and application security and even getting people into security, right? There's a lot of conversations happening today.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a friend who's looking quite, into NFT security specifically, but I'm not sure. But, I think the testing mechanisms, I'm still, very much at the beginning of learning curve for that. But the testing mechanisms are unique. I know, formal verification is among, and proofing among nodes is part of it. Again, I'm actually, you know, super new to that aspect. Language design, like any of it, is also a major factor. More emphasis on design itself. So now, starting with the current OWASP Top 10, insecure design is explicitly on there for the first time, which is important. So yeah, a lot about around the methodologies.
So just to drill into that one a bit, because I found that interesting. So insecure design is in there, and for me, it's the first one. It's sort of abstract in a sense. So what was you? I guess you're a part of OWASP to a certain degree. What do you think the thought process is around having insecure design, you know, in there and not being something like an injection flow, which you can know what it is and you can show what it is, you know?
The thought process of developers and architecture, you know, as a whole rather than something specific. I'm not sure what exactly the thought process was, but I am glad that it's on there. Because as much as it might be, you know, a lot more general and therefore vague compared to some of the other, you know, all the other nine on there, or at least for the most part, but I think, you know, it's very important that you know, you don't disregard that as a major, you know, set of risks. And
I don't actually have a problem with it. I guess where I see issues is we have customers that come to us and say, I want to test for the OWASP Top 10. And where you can actually address that makes sense. But with insecure design, that could be everything. do you know what I mean? So maybe that's the point, is to eliminate that you can't just test for the OWASP Top 10. You just have to follow the principles of the OWASP Top 10. I don't know.
It definitely is, you know, differently formatted, just, you know, again, because you can't test for it per se. But it's, yeah, I mean, but I don't know where else they would put it as far as putting it with everything else that's important and on everybody's list.
Yeah,
there's a big part of me that thinks they ought to change A1 to just be threat modeling and that's it. Just start here, people. Goodness, for the love of all that's good and holy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the context for it, right? But when we do, traditionally, when you do threat modeling, it happens in the SOC, right? And so now it's getting guys like you involved in it, Chris, and having developers, you know, understanding and thinking about where they could be exposed or where they could be manipulated or where things could fall apart, and then being able to have that all the way through. So I like the fact that it's in there as a category, just because it raises the bar for security as a front-end design concept, right? Think about it at the same time you're planning that next, you know, release, those next capabilities, and when you're deciding product functionality, and then, you know, maybe you have adversarial use cases, and maybe you have epics that deal with security and those kinds of things. So it becomes a normal part of what we do, right? So how you comply with that can be a whole nother thing. I mean, it's the same sort of challenge that you see with like the regulations that say you have to have a robust application security program. Well, what does robust mean, right? So it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
I mean, like these words, they're great for, I guess, you know, brochures or white papers, but they're meaningless.
Yeah.
We look great on a PowerPoint slide, right?
That's the problem, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, fitting anything meaningful on a PowerPoint slide is not.
Exactly.
Yeah. PowerPoint security is not security.
That's why there's Prezi. No, just kidding. Oh, man. No. That is super fun. Well, since we're on the topic about OWASP a little bit, you've done a lot of work with them, and I believe you're still the current chair, right, for Women in Application Security, but you're also connected to InfoSec Girls, right? So with Vandana, who's been on our podcast before, and we love her. So just
what's happening in the space there? And I mean, there's a lot of encouraging things that are happening. And what can we do to help get more folks involved and connected and support the great work you guys are doing?
So if you go on OASP.org and you just search Women in AppSec, it should be there. It's actually, you know, women now officially OASP Women in AppSec and Diversity and Inclusion Committee. So all minorities, again, just trying to build inclusion and diversity within AppSec. And again, that could also be based on different sets of experience, whether they're developers from a different part of security, from the hacker side, from, you know, just completely non-security, but have business knowledge or social science knowledge that could be of value to solve the problems of the faith. And just kind of getting our heads together and getting them to, you know, join OWASP in innovating. We have, you know, OWASP, just being a community-driven organization is just so, yeah, again, the open source and the need for diverse contribution and more contributors, it really falls into that category. It's you know, absolutely essential. A lot of community docs, the cheat sheet series expanding, which I'm really glad to see because they're just so useful, really in a bite-sized knowledge, kind of as you need it when you're looking something up.
Cheat sheets might be, or should be referred to as the Bible. They're just great. They're fantastic.
So how do, just in the sense of the InfoSec girls, how do you meet up? Is it just through regular virtual meetings? If someone wanted to get involved, what can they do? Is it
currently? So there is a mailing list. I don't know the specific way to join offhand. I mean, there's a link. If I could somehow share it afterward, I will. I'm not sure how.
Oh, yeah, you do. We can put it at the bottom of the notes. Yeah, yeah. I'll look it up if you don't. You know. So, yeah. No, it'd be good because I think that's a lot of things. It's just trying to understand how people can get involved in these things. You know. So
yeah, and you know, InfoSec Girls again is now also expanding to has also already expanded to InfoSec Diversity. And they had a conference, DiversityCon, which went really well. It was a global virtual conference. Again, wonderful, you know, Vandana Verma and as well as Shivani Sharma and some others, other leads really took initiative of the whole thing, had some great speakers, great keynotes, and great involvement, and they continue to grow too. There's an InfoSec Girls InfoSec Diversity Mentorship Program going on. There should be a form on LinkedIn group now.
And there was a kids one as well, wasn't it, that we heard about last year, wasn't it? Yeah. InfoSec Kids, yeah. So.
Yeah.
Again, you know, education so young. One thing, you know, I wish I had as a kid was, the adults when I was a kid being, supportive of, you know, skills and creativity more than the standard,
exactly,
especially for this day and age. So whether it be, you know, hackathons outside of security or just learning how to hack. Actually, there's one, so I first learned soldering from someone. I think she was 12 or 11 at the time, and she has her own business and leads, I think, Girls Who Hack. Her name is Bia, and she's a real role model. You know, people, you know, think that just because I'm older, I'm supposed to be the role model, but she taught me soldering. I haven't taught her anything. But getting them curious young, I mean, not only because it's scientific, I mean, obviously, you know, neuroplasticity is more of a thing at that age, but building up what they really want to do, and things are so rapidly evolving, especially in security and tech, that you know, you can't do the whole thing like, oh, what do I want to be when I grow up? Oh, we'll change in a heartbeat. Are you kidding me?
Right. Yeah. What you might want to be when you grow up may not exist when you grow up, right? Or it might be completely, completely framed. I love where you're going with this, though, because it's like we talk a lot, and I work with a lot of students at universities, and, you know, Colin and I, obviously being a little gray haired, right? We grew up in these spaces where you could fail. Yeah. Oh, you're blonde. Okay. Yes. It's naturally blonde. Exactly. It's the camera. It's the lighting. No, but we could fail, right? We have war stories and horror stories of, you know, me being a configuration management guy, right? Deleting entire code bases and having to restore from backup because you entered the wrong command in the wrong place, right? Or all of those kinds of things. And so today, I don't see that. I don't see people having those safe spaces to learn, to fail, and to grow. And where security is concerned, it's like everybody's so afraid that, you know, the sites are going to come down and the world's going to end and all of that kind of stuff. Like, we have to create these spaces where people can experiment and try and do things. And if you can get them when they're younger and curious and build off of it, then it makes all the difference in the world. So I think that's spot on. I mean, just, you know, and the fact that somebody is using a soldering iron at 12, that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah. I still don't trust myself with one. I need to go back in order to,
you know, as a dad of a daughter, I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder what the rest of the house looks like, but that's still very cool, right? To be, you gotta be able to tie stuff together and all of that. So that's pretty amazing. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, speaking of that, I mean, you're a bit of a success story in this regard. As someone who didn't start out in tech, didn't start out in computer security or computer science, you went in for business degree. So on that journey, you kind of found your way here. What would you tell someone who's, say, in junior high or high school or even early in their college, you know, adventure, if they were interested in computer science or security, what should they do or what should they think about? Or better yet, how would they even know?
Again, because everything's so rapidly changing, I'd say use a degree to become well-rounded and to go out of your comfort zone. And if you do choose to, you know, get a degree in computer science rather than, you know, continue to self-teach, then just know that continuing to learn afterward as things evolve, you know, specific roles and jobs, you know, how they continue to change, you know, their roles that definitely didn't exist a few years ago. In terms of all of it, know that, you know, even if you do choose to study computer science, most of the important learning will be on the job, you know, getting hands-on, seeing what happens, again, experimenting with labs in you know, in a safe environment, practicing other skills, volunteer communities and, you know, professional organizations, not necessarily in a job, you know, taking advantage of those opportunities, maybe for your first presentations, for example, your first talks, being able to do that among friends and practice. And, you know, definitely went into my talk on failure. And I definitely proved the need during my talk on failure because I was so exhausted and I just
if you're not failing, you're not succeeding.
right, but you know, I think one thing, important thing, and I do think, you know, based on what I hear and read and what, you know, I've lived, I do think that, I guess, women and minorities are a bit more hesitant to fail. Mm-hmm. But you have to learn that way. Don't fear failing. It's always worth a try. I'd say as long as there are no legal or safety ramifications, when in doubt, do not. Yeah, when in doubt, don't.
It's definitely a correct way to fail. Like throwing your laptop is not a good failure. Compiling code incorrectly or putting a function in that does bad things, that's a good failure sometimes.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can learn a lot there.
Your ways to learn gravity.
fail fast, fail often, but don't fail stupid.
Right. Yeah, I've got a really well-known friend who tells his staff, right, that he wants them making a mistake every week, because that way, if they're doing that, they're trying, right? They're learning. But then he goes, but don't make the same mistake, right? Because then you're not learning. So it's that kind of idea. Like, we have to be okay with folks failing and blowing it and stuff like that. We all do it. We all get up off the mat. So, I mean, part of that onus is on us creating those safe spaces to say, yeah, go ahead and fail, right? Mm-hmm. And make it easier for people to be able to do that. So that they can learn, right? If you have to be perfect all the time, that is exhausting.
Right. I don't find it exhausting.
let's ask Mrs. Colin.
Yeah. What are you talking about? I've never failed. I don't know what that's like at all.
My wife sitting behind me can assure you I fail every day. So. Anyway. So what would be, just I guess to kind of close the thoughts out from my end, like, what would be the one thing you would tell people in the application security space today? If you had kind of just 30 seconds at Black Hat or RSA, everybody's looking at you, not to freak out, but what would your one thought be?
So at a conference specifically, I would say, look around you, make some friends, learn from them, and teach them something, because chances are, you know, given the craziness that is our industry, I think, you know, each person will have a different story and a lot to learn from each other. And, you know, you're going to, you know, want that experience while you have it.
Yeah. Don't you think I think that's a very key message. Collaboration, I think, is one of the big keys that we don't do enough of in, you know, in our industry, you know, so that's great advice, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, just always stay in the loop and just know that whatever constitutes as it, you know, in the loop will always change.
Exactly. We're always looping. It's an infinite loop.
The only constant is change. I've got so many of them.
Yeah.
unfortunately, we run to an end. We, you know, we've sort of limited time with these things, but this has been a very insightful conversation. I really appreciate you joining us. You know, hopefully we can see you again, and maybe we can meet up in person.
Yes.
I'm hopeful this is the year when that starts to happen.
We hope. Do you have any speaking engagements coming up or places where we can point people where they can connect with you?
Well, not as of yet, but I'll keep you posted. Yeah, I guess, you know, in person is becoming a thing again, so I will let you know.
Excellent. Yeah. Perfect. And Zoe is active on Twitter, is a great follow, so I certainly encourage you guys to look for her out there as well.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Zoe. That was awesome. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Good one.
You bet.
Okay, well, I guess that takes us to the end of another fine episode. It was great talking to Zoe. It was great talking to you guys, as always.
Yeah.
Look forward to the next one. Maybe I will be in another country when we do the next one. That could be very entertaining. So,
don't be a lantern, whatever you do.
No one be a lantern. Yes.
Wow. Do right by your coworkers.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.